Morning. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Monday, February 20th, and the time is 9:06 a.m. Members of House Education present are Vice Chair Representative Parrish, Representative Ivy Sponholz, she was here, I think she's still around, Representative Zach Fansler, Representative Jennifer Johnson, Representative Chuck Kopp, and Representative Dave Tallarico. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Record secretary today is Kelly Burnett, and Ben Manley is here from the LIO to help with our teleconferencing. Thank you both. Today we'll be hearing from the University of Alaska. Since we only have an hour, actually 53 minutes now, I'd like to get right into it and ask President Johnson to go ahead and introduce everyone who will be speaking today and proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thanks to members of the committee for the opportunity to talk about a very important issue to the University of Alaska, and I believe to the state of Alaska as well. I am joined by Kit Duke on the phone, a former executive whose portfolio at the university included our lands, and also Andy Harrington, a member of our legal team, who has developed himself into an expert in the history of the University of Alaska lands issue. So as I'll go through a presentation here, and to the extent I can answer questions, I certainly will be happy to, and then we've got these two experts on the line who can go into more detail as appropriate. My purpose here this morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is twofold, basically. The first is to shed light on one reason why the University of Alaska depends on the state for so much of our funding, and it's basically because we didn't get our land. And the second is to educate you now in preparation for the work we are doing and an ask that we anticipate coming to you for at some time in the future, hopefully the not too distant future. We'll walk through 4 points here. One is to describe and bring you up to speed on our land grant deficit. Second is to touch on our current thinking as to a solution here. Third, describe for you the land holdings we currently have in Alaska. And then finally, a little bit about the financials, how we actually account for the revenues that come from our land sales and development activity. So as I like to say, we're the land-grant university without the land. Only Delaware got a smaller land grant than we did. Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Connecticut, you know, states off in the East Coast there that they're not big enough to even write their names on the state. They have to do that out in the Atlantic Ocean. Those states got bigger land grants than we did. Hawaii didn't get a land grant, and they got cash in lieu of a land grant, and of course we're always open to that as well. We received approximately 110,000 acres of land, and all prior to statehood, and our estimated land grant deficit, so what we're due under various federal acts, and what we got is roughly 360,000 acres. So a little bit of history here. It goes back to 1862. Abraham Lincoln did a number of great things for our country, and one of them was signing the Morrill Act. Of course, in 1867, he also signed the purchase, of Alaska from Russia. But in 1862, he signed this act, and the whole idea here was to try to develop the frontier by training the workforce and by giving land to universities who would then develop those lands all across the country. In 1955, the story goes that territorial delegate James Wickersham was walking out of his office and tripped on a statute book that was holding his door open. And it fell open, goes the story, to the Morrill Act. And he thought, this is interesting. I don't know whether that's a true story or not, but that's what the history books say. But he was able to get some land for the university at that time, and in fact the cornerstone that you see on the UA Fairbanks campus today, which was poured and commemorated in 1915, was a result of this action taken by territorial delegate Wickersham. 1917, just a little tiny bit more history, 1917, this body, the territorial legislature, identified the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines as Alaska's post-secondary education institution, and it was in 1935 that it became the University of Alaska. But back to the storyline here, in 1929, the Sutherland Land Grant Statute, an additional 100,000 acres to the territory for the exclusive use of, again, then the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. Fast forward to statehood. Versions of the early statehood bills had the university in line for 10 million acres. The final statehood act, however, was quite different, and Congress repealed the 1915 land grant, removed our eligibility for Morrill Act lands. Instead, the Congress gave the territory, the state, a very large land grant of 103 million acres from which the university was to receive its lands. In 1959, the first Alaska legislature said, okay, here's your land, university, a million acres. The governor vetoed that act by the legislature. We really start out a little more than 100 years ago. 58 years ago comes the state of Alaska with an opportunity to take care of the issue, and progress not made. Additional acts of Congress, of course, dealing with lands, complex issues from 66 to 1980, major acts of Congress there. Coming fast forward, both Senators Mikowski, Congressman Young, and have introduced federal bills in an attempt to address the land grant deficit to no avail. In 2000, the state passed a law, Senate Bill 7, to authorize the university to select some land to go some way in addressing the land grant deficit. The governor vetoed that. The legislature overrode that veto. And interestingly, that went to the Supreme Court, and the court decided that conveyance of land was not an appropriation. It also raised, however, another issue, and that is dedication, the non-dedication clause of the Constitution, but it didn't make a decision on that. That decision came later in 2009 when the court actually decided that, yes, indeed, a conveyance of land was an appropriation subject to the non-dedication clause of the state constitution. And that was in the context of House Bill 130. Governor Parnell tried to address it without success. And in that interim, we began sending lands back to the state, lands that were conveyed under the act that was overturned by the Supreme Court. By our counting, as I noted earlier, we're short about 360,000 acres. And we believe that remedying this land grant deficit would help the university generate more revenue and thereby moderate our state general fund support. The state, the legislature, the governor, or federal delegation has attempted to remedy this deficit over time, but as just outlined, it is constitutionally precluded from doing so, and we appreciate all those many efforts to help us. We've certainly been in touch with folks back east in D.C., and their position is that the university land was included in the Statehood Act, and it has resisted remedies to address it at the federal level. So, you know, everyone, it appears, wants us to have land just as long as it's the other guy's land.
Excuse me, President Johnson.
Yes,
I just
Chair.
Want to recognize that Representative Laura Reinbold has joined us. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
So I don't frankly know why it took us so long to keep reading the sentence in the Alaska Constitution, which prohibits dedications, but there it is, except when required by the federal government for state participation in federal programs. That's an interesting exception. So, I mean, to put it simply, after a lot of very sophisticated legal analysis, let's go create a federal program. framework for establishing a permanent UA land grant endowment consisting of both state and federal land that'll ensure compliance with the state's constitution. Such participation in that federal program, once it is established, will require the state to convey lands for the purpose of endowing the university's permanent land trust, and I'll describe that in more detail in just a moment. We are in discussions with the Department of Natural Resources, and we have discussed this with folks on the third floor. We've also raised this issue with our congressional delegation, and we are fast at work now on creating that legislation to create such a federal program. So to the specifics here, we have about 150,000 total acres of land, mostly acquired from the feds, but also we have acquired land from private parties, donations, purchase, and from local, state, and federal governments. We have a land management office at the statewide administration, one of them, not three, just for the record, and it's responsible for managing, developing, acquiring, and disposing of all of the university's real property. Since 1987, over $204 million of revenue have been generated by our land leases and sales. Income from all of that activity goes into this land grant endowment trust fund. It is managed by the University of Alaska Foundation Board of Trustees. Earnings are used to fund a number of programs. I want to emphasize earnings. We don't go into that to the principle of it. It's earnings of those funds are used to fund education, research projects, a lot of research, our ag programs, extension. And I would note that this is the source of funds for the very successful Alaska Scholars Program, which provides a tuition scholarship for our high school graduates in the top 10% of their class. Since the advent, that program is 18 years old this year, and since the advent of that program, 3,882 Alaskans have graduated, Alaska Scholars, and very proud of that success, and a very diverse group of Alaskans. I would note 64% of those folks were women, 36% young men, and 17% Alaska Natives. So here's a little summary of our land holdings. If you start over on the left here, 150,000 ballpark total acres. Some of that is allocated for educational purposes, a little over 12,000 acres, and research, et cetera. And then investment properties, 138,517 acres in the broad class of current investment property. We have acreage that we've used for timber development and continue to. We have inholdings in national parks, roughly 10,000 acres of those. We have subdivisions that we're currently developing across the state, residential subdivisions, about 4,000 acres for material sales, gravel, and the like. A small amount, a couple thousand acres, potential oil and gas development, and then another roughly 96,000 acres remaining. Bit of an eye chart here, but more information on the specific locations of these lands across the state by category across the top, so you can get a sense of the allocation of our lands. Then into the land grant, land trust balance here, you can see the trend over time. Fortunately, has been to grow. Of course, we experienced, like the rest of the country, FY08 to FY09. That's where you see the recession kicking in, because a lot of these funds are invested broadly across the country and in markets. But it's been climbing back up gradually, although we've seen a decline here recently as well. I would note again that we use the earnings off of these funds. So if we go to this the last slide in the presentation here, you know, the principal, or as of FY16, the $138 million here in the land grant endowment trust fund is not in and of itself available for spending. It's the earnings off of that. that we use. So it's our goal here to drive that number up so that we can drive the earnings up so that over the long term we can moderate our dependence on the state for annual operating revenues. Before opening it up to questions, Madam Chair, you know, we have, I believe, a strong case to make. We have a land grant deficit. We have tried, and many great Alaskans have tried over the years to try to remedy the deficit without success. But I think now we have a plan that is a viable plan, and we look forward to our discussion here this morning to addressing any questions you may have in preparation for progress on the federal front, and then eventually and hopefully soon an opportunity to come before you again to ask for your support. Madam Chair, my presentation.
Thank
We're
you.
Happy to respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, President Johnson. Any questions for President Johnson? Representative Johnston, go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you. I'm just going back through the slides here to make sure I have this accurate. Before the last Supreme Court decision, you are giving back now how many acres to the state?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I believe it was 250,000 acres.
Yeah, I was trying to, yeah.
So we received that and then turned it back over.
So if this all works between the federal government and the state, you would start with those acres as far as getting it back into the land trust. Would that be accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, that would certainly be a starting point, but I think it's also wise for us to look at other lands potentially. For example, our Alaska Center for Energy and Power has done a rigorous assessment of renewable energy lands here in Alaska, geothermal, wind, etc., and we think it would be appropriate to have a look at that and perhaps modify the selections that we received back last time and include some of those lands in the selection going forward.
And that brings me to my actual question, Chair, if I could follow. do you have any sense of where you would be on the list as lands became available? I know that their municipality Anchorage does not have their full allotment. I think probably Siri still doesn't. I'm not sure which of our native corporations might not have. So do you know federally where the University of Alaska would be put on the list as far as when lands become available?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, there are many organizations, I believe, in Alaska that have yet to receive their full allotment, I believe.
Including maybe the state.
Yeah, I believe Doyon, for example, the state of Alaska itself. Now, in terms of where we actually are on the list, if you don't mind, I would like to ask Kit Duke, who's on the line, to I don't have an answer, but perhaps she can respond to you with that. Kit, do you have some insight into where we stand in line?
Excuse me.
I have a partial answer to Representative Johnston's question. We have identified some lands that we believe will not be contended by other people that haven't gotten their full allotment yet, but we don't have a clear understanding of where we might be on the federal list for priority. And I think the more that we are able to identify lands that other people don't want, but that could be valuable to the university, the sooner we can accomplish a transfer of land to the university.
Ms. Duke, would you please put put yourself on the record as to your association and your name?
Oh, yes.
Neglected to do
this
that.
This is Kit Duke. I'm with the University of Alaska System Office.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any further questions for the speakers? Mr. Chalarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for clarity, President Johnson, when we talk about investment property, we're referring to any land that would be for sale, lease, material sales. That's kind of an all-inclusive.
Through the chair, Representative Tallarico, yes, sir.
Okay, and Madam Chair, can I follow
up? Yes, go ahead, Mr. Ellery.
I was just wondering, we've kind of been attempting to get a bridge across the Nenana River west of Nenana. But, on the west side of the Nenana River there near Nenana, where Doyon is exploring for oil and gas, does the university have property over there on the west side of the Nenana River near Nenana?
Through the chair, Representative Tallarico, I believe we do, but I would ask Kit Duke, who has more intimate knowledge of that, whether she can confirm that we have land in that location or thereabouts.
Yes, this is Kit Duke with the University System Office. We have at least two parcels, one of which we have given Doyon a temporary exploration lease access to.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Anybody else with questions? Representative Fansler, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I know this will obviously be hard to get exact answers to, but is there some sort of rough timeline that the university is hoping for getting something accomplished on the federal level and then moving forward? And also, it sounds like you have some acreage picked out that might be not contentious and maybe you can get right away, but what are your projections here on what are we talking about for helping out the university?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Fansler, very difficult to predict what could be happening in Washington, D.C. With respect to many issues, but certainly including this issue. That said, we are hearing indications of support from our delegation, and we have resources back there focused on this issue. We will begin soon, once things become more clear in the Interior Department, conversations there on this issue. So very tough to predict. These things do take time. Our hope, I think you used that word, I'm not going to bank on hope, but we do have hope. It's good. Our hope is that we can move relatively quickly here the next year or two. Lands issues are always very complicated. The history of Alaska lands issues, long and complex. But in any case, our hope is to move forward next year or two and then to come back to work with you. So to that end, to the extent we can educate, address questions that members of this body may have over the next year or two, then we believe we'll be at a point of readiness, if you will, to be able to move more expeditiously here at the Alaska level.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the National Park System in holdings, I see that we've got a fair bit of land there. Mm-hmm. What revenues come to the state from that?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I don't know that we have any revenues coming from those inholdings at this point, but again, if I would like to ask Kit Duke if she could shed some light on that question.
This is Kit Duke with the university. We do not get revenues per se from those land holdings because we have no leases on them because of access issues. We have traded one piece of NPS property for a usable piece of property in the area of Seward. And we have been in negotiations with the Park Service for the possibility of an additional inholding, but for sale to the National Park Service. So they represent, as long as the federal government has the ability to spend money to acquire those lands, they do represent the possibility of income to the university, but we haven't been able to monetize very many of those acres as of this time.
Thank you.
And Representative Fansler, additional questions?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, just a follow-up question. On here, on the pyramids slide 11. Of the 96,813 acres remaining, is that the category in which our current facilities for the University of Alaska fall under, such as, you know, UAF and UAA and UAS's campuses and all our community and regional campuses as well, or are they under a different category on here?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, those are in the educational lands there, so you see the 12,183 acres there on the left-hand side of this inverted pyramid.
Oh, sorry, okay.
Yep, so that's campus lands are there.
Okay.
Would you like me to add a little bit of explanation to what that 96,000 represents?
Yes, please go ahead, Ms. Duke. Tell us your name once again for the recording.
Okay, Kit Duke with the university. The 96,813 acres represents land that for the most part we have been unable to determine that we have the ability to monetize it in the next 5 years, either because of access issues or because we don't know enough about the land to know if there are natural resources that could be harvested or mined. If you look at, for instance, in the second part of, at the top, the second part, the 17,000 acres, those are acres that we have been able to identify have the potential for sale to the timber industry. It has the right kind and size and age of tree to make it monetizable. And the subdivisions obviously are monetizable when the market is there, which the market's not very strong for those kinds of properties right now, but hopefully will be again in the future. And then the 3,995 acres of potential material sales represents acreage that we know has gravel and other kinds of materials that are usable in development projects. And then the 2,087 acres are acres that we actually know contain the potential for oil and gas development. So that's the extent of my input. And the 96,000, we of course would like to have more data on, and we're working to gain that data, but we don't have it right now.
Representative Fansler, that was the end on your questions?
You can come back again. Yes, thank you.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, President Johnson, for this presentation. We used to have a public school land trust. We converted it, I think, in 1978 to a cash trust. I know you said earlier you wouldn't mind taking cash if we had it, but I know you kind of meant it in jest, but it seems like with lands, as we're seeing, it is very complicated figuring out how to work that out. Has the university done an analysis to see what the value is of the lands that they have and what the value is of the 360,000 to be selected, with the end goal of saying if the legislature was to come forward with a plan like we did for K-12 public school land trust and we converted that to cash, what that would look like. It seems like we don't want to just look at the present state that we're in now. We all believe someday things will improve, and if that's a better final solution for the university or a balance maybe between cash and lands. Has any of that discussion occurred?
Well, through the chair, Representative Kopp, you're correct that it was in jest that I raised that issue of cash, given the state's very serious fiscal condition. I am not aware, certainly in my watch here, we have not done that kind of analysis. I would ask, again, Kit Duke, who precedes me, whether there has been any kind of analysis or estimation done along the lines you're suggesting.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Kit Duke with the university. We have done some analysis both of our existing land particularly the land that we know contains natural resources. And I don't have those figures in front of me right this moment, but we could give you an estimation, for instance, of what we think the earnings could be if we harvested timber on these 17,000 acres. As to the acreage that we would be seeking, we are trying to make sure that we know as much as possible about those parcels and their potential for either lease or harvesting timber or mining materials and other valuable commodities. And also we're trying to select acreage that might have potential for oil and gas royalties or revenues.
I have questioned myself, President Johnson and Ms. Duke. What would prevent a new bill from coming out of the legislature to grant you the remaining lands? Is it simply an understanding of the will of the legislature?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I quite understand your question. Is that assuming that there would be a federal program there such that the exception would be in place? Because if that's the case, our legal analysis is that there would be no barrier to the legislature's taking that action at that time. Prior to that, however, we believe that the decision of the Supreme Court in 2009 would place a constitutional bar to the legislature's appropriation granting us land.
Interesting. Okay, thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, I guess this is it. Thank you very much, President Johnson, for speaking with us today. I'm sure if any of our members come up with additional questions, they will be happy to pass them on.
Okay.
I'd like to remind everyone that the next House Education meeting will be a joint meeting with the Senate on Wednesday, and will start at our usual 8 a.m. time. With that, I am adjourning us at 9:39 a.m.